Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Oh, what a shot!
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We are here on the Yellow Ball Network, and we're on a different time. Obviously, this is not Tuesday. It is Sunday evening, and still trying to figure out exactly what we're trying to do here going forward on the show and the times, and so far Sunday seeming to work out fairly well. We'd love to hear from you. Love if there's anybody listening, they can call in. The Yellow Ball hotline number is 646-652-4856. Hopefully somebody will call in. I'm hoping to maybe get a chance to talk a little bit with Coach Creasy tonight and maybe a few of the other guys out there. Right now we're going to take a quick commercial break, come right back, and we'll find out what's been going on in tennis.
Come play the Marietta Grand Prix. It's a lot of fun. You get to play a lot of tennis, and we have Chick-fil-A sandwiches from Chick-fil-A. And you get to eat a lot. And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey, folks. This is J.P. Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility, windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards, you can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
Okay, we're back here. It's a Sunday evening, and I just getting ready to sit down. I'm end of a long day. Spent some time at the tennis center, and then went out and spent some time hunting. And I've got Coach Creasy on the line here. Coach, how you doing? Coach,
I'm
you there?
JP. Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Well, I'm going to try my best in the new year, keep up with you with your radio show. I don't know how many consecutive shows you've got. How many shows have you put on now, radio show-wise?
Well, about 3.5 years, so I'm thinking probably 160 or 170, something like that.
160 or 70?
Yeah,
160
or 70.
You know, my son, the other day, it's Tuesday, and I've got all these things going on. It's difficult now as I'm trying to do some homeschooling and stuff with my son. But sitting there, my son says, "Don't you have a radio show?" James says to me, "You have a radio show." And I said, "I'm supposed to have a radio show, but I can't do it today." He says, "Well, you got to have a radio show. I want to hear you and Coach Greasy. I love it when you and Coach Greasy come on and you talk." So he loves sitting in on the show. Somebody, at least I have one fan out there who loves listening to the show. And he loves listening to you, too. So I don't know. I just figured I went, I raced in here to get this done. I'll tell you this. Doing these radio shows, I don't know what it's like for you, but I haven't been as consistent as you have. I've taken a few weeks off here and there, but I've kept it going on some level. And, you know, it's actually very enjoyable to do. It's a very good medium to get the message out. I was going back through and looking. There was close to 700 people listening to the show over the time period that Luke Jensen was on the show. They had listened to that.
Yeah.
They either picked it up and different things. And you think about that. It's hard to get a lot of people together, you know, listen to these radio shows. In yours,
well,
I think
that you have a duty to do them all, most, JP, because people need a forum to be able to speak out, and that's what I've always believed. And then you have some great guests on, and people want to hear what they think as well. And we don't have time to go to a lot of conferences and things as much anymore. And it's just a fantastic medium there that you have. And your show's always entertaining, so a lot of fun. You talk about things other people are afraid
speaking
to talk
of conferences,
about.
Speaking of conferences, okay, we had recently here, I don't know if you know, actually you do know, but nobody else knows. I'll go ahead and talk about it now. I'm sitting here, I'm down here at home. We're doing the show from my home tonight. So if in the background you hear, I've got Brio, Lucy, and Junior hanging out here in the basement with me. So they might pipe in at some point on the show. But this past week, I had John Embry in for the Georgia Professional Tennis Association meeting, and he came in to talk. Now, nobody really knows this. There are several people, though, and I've seen this, and I didn't understand this. A couple of things. Awards. First of all, I didn't know this happens. Did you know that with most of the tennis awards that are out there, what happens is there's self-nominating that goes on? Did you understand that?
I've heard of it. Golly, I could go pretty deep with this, but I really believe that people are almost desperate to get recognition now. And the reason why, it's not that there are not enough awards and things to go around, but we have so much information on the internet, and people can pretty much frame themselves into different ways. I mean, you can use the internet to really prop up just about anything. So I just think that there are a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of participation trophies in our teaching and our coaching as well. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can prop things up and try to make a presentation. Now, the damage that does is, you've always heard me say that when you champion the weak, you weaken the real champions. But really, people do not know what is quality and what is not. People don't know the difference between diamonds and rhinestones anymore. So we have a lot of, I hate to say fake awards, but a lot of, that should not happen when people try to prop themselves up. But I just think that, you know, you work real hard for something, and you have these awards that you used to work for, and you think, you know, I'd like to have this recognition. And then you see that, wow, this person over here got some type of a fake participation trophy. And then you say, I need to go out there and scrap and get an award too. And so maybe nominate themselves.
Well, I
mean, you know, it's really just diluted the whole process. We see this all the time, you know, and it just, there's so many awards out there, nobody pays much attention to it. It's you know, I don't know.
Excited.
It's really damaging.
I was excited. I don't know who it was, somebody nominated me for Director of the Year here in Georgia.
Wait a minute. You should get something for what you were able to accomplish with Wayne Bryan coming to town and all that you've been doing with your Little Mo tournaments and things. And, I mean, I love the fact that you put so many things together. And you do a lot for a lot of kids there, Coach.
Well, there's a lot of promotion that goes along with it and stuff, but Wayne did that. That's not Wayne. JP didn't – look, JP called Wayne. He connived with Wayne. I manipulated Wayne into coming here. But at any rate, so I get nominated for this, Jordan. Now I'm thinking – I'm getting a little greedy here. I'm thinking I might get an award. I don't usually go to the GPTA meetings, but John Embry's in town, and I sort of wanted to see him because I wanted to see what he had to say. And so I go to this thing, and, you know, I go to these meetings, and I don't know what it is, but I can't stay silent. Now, I'm thinking that it's going to be a nice, you know, pretty interesting meeting, and John gets up there, and he begins to speak, and he informs everybody that that the USPTA is selling its building in Houston. And they're moving to Lake Nona. I think it's Lake Nona. Is it Lake Nona or Lake Noni or Lake Nono? Which one is it in Florida?
Yeah, Lake Nona. Yeah.
Nona. Okay, they're moving to Lake Nona. And this is the place that the USGA is now going to move. And I'm not sure if I understand correctly. They're going to move the whole – do you understand exactly what it is? Are they going to move all the headquarters down to Lake Nona?
They're attempting to centralize everything. What has happened?
So they're going to centralize everything. They're going to move down to Lake Nona, and I'm sitting there, and John says, he says, but we're going to remain fiercely independent. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself. I said to myself, if I speak up with all these people here, there's a lot of people around. If I speak up. The award's gone. I'm probably not going to get the award, but I
complicated with that. I mean, you know, do you think there's some people there that are just going to say, wait a minute, that just eliminated him from some award,
you know,
or something?
I tell you, I do. I'm sitting there, I'm looking at the people that are around at this meeting. A lot of them, you know, he's telling everybody, he's telling you, John's a very convincing guy. And he's sitting there, you know, he was very convincing when he was with Wilson. He got some of the best kids in the country to go with them. And ever since then, he's been a pretty good sales guy. So
he's a political guy.
All the talking heads here, you know, they're nodding their heads and, so I'm sitting there, I'm saying, you know, well, I raise my hand, and I can tell he either wants to raise, you know, either recognize me or not. Nobody else is raising there, so he asked me, and I said, I can't see it. I can't see, John, how you're going to be able to stay independent. And right then I could see the faces, everybody turned toward me, and they're putting their, you know, some people are rolling their eyes. And they, you know,
no award for you, James.
But
all right, So tell me, are you losing sleep because they've slashed you from the award list? I mean, that's the biggest
it's
thing.
Not that. It's, you know, I don't understand why people. Maybe you can explain this to me. I don't understand as coaches. You and I talk about this sort of stuff a lot, and it seems to me that there's a great portion of the coaches out there, maybe 90%. Well, there's only, you know, we're sort of outliers. Look, we're out here talking about stuff, doing stuff that most people don't want to talk about. And we express what we think. But most people would rather, you know, most people in that room were very uncomfortable with me asking that question because it's a controversial question. It's a confrontational question to John Embry. And I probably could have taken it. I didn't. I left it sort of at that. I didn't push him too much past that. But I'm wondering, why are more people not able to recognize this sort of stuff? I mean, why
well,
is it because... Is because are we just that far off? And am I that far off in my thinking?
No. Well, first of all, people know you as a good and an honest man. Number one, you know, I mean, I treasure the friendship I have with you, and I treasure those things you do because I see what you do so unselfishly for so many kids, so many people. I mean, come on. I mean, you basically give away the shop as far as your coaching is concerned. You help people all over the place, and you should be a multimillionaire with the effort you put into things if you were focused on making money. You really have a, and I'm just not pumping the sunshine here, but you have a vocation to teach, vocation to coach, and you honestly love tennis to a degree that, you know, I don't know many people who love it as much as you. You know, so the point is that, you know, you go deeper, and I think that you think about things deeper than most people. I think most people, a lot of people have tennis as a job, not to say that everybody, you know, other people don't love it, but people look at it as a job, and I don't think that people just go that deeply. Now, there's another side of it. You've had a radio show for over 4 years, and you investigate things. You're staying on the cutting edge of things. You read things. You have this We Coach Tennis website, this blog, this Facebook thing. And so you read things all the time, so you're really on the cutting edge of things. And I think, you know, you ever see that Waters World on O'Reilly? You know, I mean,
Weber's
you know
world.
How... Your water world, yeah, he'll walk and he'll talk. It's just like, it used to be like jaywalking. Well, he'll go out there and he'll ask people, listen to these questions, and people are just like, you know, they're not on the same wavelength. That's as kind as I can be. Well, most people do not recognize.
Well, let me ask you a question, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but, and I know you hate it when I do, but you bring up something right there. I want to ask, you just mentioned that there's so much information out there, and we're having to take it into a fire hose. Are most people
It's like drinking water out of a fire hose, and nobody knows what to take in, what to pay attention to, what not to. And nobody, frankly, nobody knows what the truth and what the truth is not. So most of us, if you're not on the cutting edge, if you're not paying close enough attention, what happens, JP, is that people believe that our leaders, first of all, are learned people, that they are there, you know, because they're the best of the best. And then they believe that the leaders are telling the truth, therefore, and they also believe that they have our interest in the best interest at heart. Now, I really believe that you have so much information, you have so much knowledge. You brought out a big, big point to me a month or so ago. You've told me before, but it really hit home when you said most of the time, now, decisions are made because of corporate America and the tennis manufacturers. The USTA is not independent as it once was in an educational. Now, they could say they're an educational operation, and they can say that they're for the good of this or that. But basically, corporations and things are done to, whether it's the red, orange, green ball, come on, that was done for education. No, they can say what they want, but basically they started a new, complete new industry to sell equipment for these guys. Or, you know, and the long and the short of it is that, golly, you know, it's like you sort of get sick of seeing things going on, and you're just going, what? You know, are you kidding me? But a lot of people just believe. I mean, we would like to believe that our leaders are all doing things for the right reasons. And look, there are good and noble people in every operation, but I think that bureaucracies corrupt, And because once you sign on with a bureaucracy, you have to do the sort of company line. But then at the same time, you know, the corporations, once they have an agenda, I think that they push their agenda forward, and they sort of, and I'm not saying, look, maybe they're going to go up there, maybe the USDA is going to go, USPPA is going up there, and they're going to be independent of the USDA. Well, wait a minute, I don't think so. I mean, come on. They're in the same place. Wait a minute, they're living in the same house. It's sort of like, I don't think so. That just, it doesn't jive. I don't care what somebody says, that doesn't jive. You know, so.
But people would sit there and listen, and they hear it, and the guy's standing there, and he's got the credibility, and he's saying it, and people believe it, but they don't recognize. This is a weak coach in a show. Hold on, let me ask you, having the title.
And the credibility are two different things.
Let me get you to ask about this. We've got the We Coach Tennis site. This is the We Coach Tennis show. And people are probably rolling their eyes. They're going, why are you worried about this? You can coach any way you want. I don't think that they see. I see and I feel that it impedes an atmosphere of freedom. And I think that it causes me and it causes coaches, and they may not even experience it or see it at the present, but they'll see it over time. After 20 years, you can see your sort of your freedom to coach a certain way erode, and it's maybe by pressure or peer pressure or this or that. But I'm asking you, do you see the same thing I do? Do you see how over time, because of the complicit nature of the two organizations, we're going to get to a point where it's going to be so centralized that there's not going to be that enthusiasm. There's not going to be that inspiration in coaching kids. And I think that's important, isn't it?
Well, a good parallel would be the Common Core. If you take Common Core, which is under such fire right now in the United States as far as their educational system, and what teachers, my wife is a teacher. I started out being a high school math teacher at one time, and my wife was a teacher, and I know a lot of teachers. But when the government, our government, comes through with this very nice-looking, smooth thing, like we're going, whether it's No Child Left Behind or the Common Core curriculum, we're going to stick up for the academics of our youngsters. But what happens with the bureaucracy and what happens with overregulation is they end up, like you say, taking the freedoms away from the teachers, from the kids, from what is taught, and pretty much they have their agenda. And it's a cookie cutter agenda, and this is why I used to argue with the red, orange, and green people. I used to say, look, even when they invented sliced bread, sliced bread was the best invention ever, they still gave you the option to cut your own if you wanted to, right? What the problem that they did was they came in and said, no, this is it. This is the best thing going. You must do it this way. We're mandating tournaments being played this way. Now, what they did immediately is they took away people's right to choose and the creativity. And no matter how they coined it, they took away your creativity and your freedom. So it's exactly what you're saying. Once you do that, then you kill innovation. Once you do that, you kill people's enthusiasm to stand out and to do their own thing. And what you kill also, the teacher is not excited to go to work each day. Okay, wait a minute. I'm going to work today, and I'm going to, guess what, put in the USDA cookie-cutter method of teaching here. Okay, I'm really fired up. No, I'm not. I went and taught for an hour and a half this evening, and I had three youngsters, and all of them had different needs, and all of them had a little different approach. Now, I will take a little bit here, a little bit there, and I take things from when I started teaching back in the 1970s and things I learned 3 months ago and things I learned 6 years ago, and I put them together. And the point being is that I take great pride. I came home and I told my wife I got a great buzz tonight. It was, the weather was beautiful. I had these three kids. They were getting it. They're starting to get it, and it was fantastic. Now, let's say if I had to go over there and I had to teach out of a curriculum, a textbook, like a Common Core curriculum for tennis, And that kills a man or a woman's initiative. And that you cannot have that because it takes the heart out of the situation. And once you do that, this is the problem. Whenever something gets too big, you have people who become components in that organization, and they do not end up feeding or learning and growing from the organization. It starts sapping their energy, and they die, and the organization becomes very average. Their heart dies. I mean, and
it's
tragic. It's tragic. So,
you and I, go
ahead.
Well, you and I've taught along together. Now, there are things that you do with footwork that as far as the game of tennis is concerned, probably one of the biggest areas is the movement to the ball and movement, to and from the ball, movement around the court. You and I teach differently, though. You will emphasize it at this stage. You got John Eagleton. He's got a new system, Techni Tennis, and maybe he's going to come to our high school coaches conference. I don't know. But you got him. You got this guy Steve Smith. Now he's got a whole different approach to it over here. You've got your way.
It's free enterprise, though. It's free enterprise.
Right.
Look, it's free enterprise. Isn't it exciting to see who's
Exactly. It's like kind of like Dean. Okay, you got Dean Smith versus Bobby Knight, right? And it's played out in a game.
Right.
One day, years ago, you told me. One day you and I were talking, and you said, this is great for you. You're going to go to this park, and you're going to have your own laboratory there to do.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering if in the new system, in the new way that I see coming down the pike, with the USTA prescribing this and prescribing that, and they're doing a lot of prescription. Our young coaches.
They're writing prescriptions for everybody. I mean, you think about it, and you're going to have to go to their drugstore to get their prescription. And,
Look. One of the things that and I guess my question, I'm concerned about young coaches coming up and falling in. Kind of like sheeple and just falling into line and following these guys and doing what they want. They were all nodding their heads there. They're all looking, they're rolling their eyes at me, putting their hands in their face, and going, oh my God, what is he asking again this time? I'm thinking about this, and I feel like it's pretty important that we question things along the way, that there is an alternative to, at least one way of doing things. No, I mean, otherwise, aren't we going to be just like, Sweden and Russia and, a lot of these other central sort of government?
Yeah, and you know what? That's really a good point. What happened once that the Borg experiment or the Borg system left Sweden, they sort of buried. Then it was Germany, and then it was Spain, the Spanish system. Now, what's going on when they're Spanish players? And the point is that the United States of America is great because you don't know where the next innovative brilliance is going to come from.
So far, it's been anti-system, hasn't it?
Excuse me?
I mean, think about it for a second. Well, so far, hasn't it been, if you look at the results and you look at where people come from, if you look at the McEnroes, you look at Jay Berger, you look at Tim Mayotte, you look at all the people that have been, Sampras, Agassi, it's been anti-system, hasn't it? It hasn't come out of a system.
Completely.
And
it's not systems.
Get it to fall into a system. Go ahead.
Completely. It's not systems. It's incentives that you give individuals for independent thinking and independent. The beautiful thing that used to be to go to the most exciting thing of going to Kalamazoo or a tournament used to be that you wanted to see who was stepping up, who was doing something special, who was being innovative, who was creating their own systems. And that's what energizes everyone. And then what was beautiful also is that people would gravitate towards those winners and people would, it really is a beautiful, beautiful thing. My golly, it's, it's an innovation. I hated the brackets when they came out. The technology always said that technology should never be better than skill set. You dumb down the skill set, you're dumbing down the creativity of the sport. You know, technology allowed medium players to play well, bad players to play good, good players to play great. You know, but the point being is that when Prince Rackets came out, I can remember the first year at Kalamazoo, Prince Rackets came out and a couple people were using them, and within the next year, a bunch of people were using them, and, you know, and this was because of this innovation, and, you know, and look, if they came out and they used these red, orange, green balls, and, you know, they had a test group of kids were using them, and those kids started dominating everything, you go, wow, we better learn how to do this, and we better go in this direction, but they did it. The absolute worst thing they could do is using coercive leadership, was leadership by force. Persuasive leadership is okay. Leadership by example is the best. But the coercive leadership that USTA used by forcing people to do this was appalling for a national organization that's supposed to be educational driven. But, you know, and the point is they're not educationally driven, as they are said. They are corporately driven, aren't they? I mean, if they are. And the fact that our big teaching organization, the USPTA, would go and be in cahoots, and I don't want to say that they shouldn't get some impact there, but if they're going to go under that umbrella, then we're going, wow, there goes your creativity. Well, I'm looking to be a Little League baseball coach with my son so that I can be creative in my own ways. And I'm not just being a rebel, but we want freedom. I'd rather be average at being free than to be great at being a cookie cutter, you know, imitation or a cookie cutter regulation, cookie cutter have to fall in line. Socialistic type mentality. It's just awful. It's just awful. So I look, our organization, USTA, needs to be a helpful organization. They run their seminars. I've been so many times to their National Teachers Conference. You get fantastic information. You learn from everybody else. But the minute they started getting into regulation of the sport, they really overstepped their bounds. And the overregulation is probably caused under stimulation, and we've had very few champions, haven't we, since that time?
Very few. I want to take a quick break. I want to come back. Let me take a commercial break, but I want to ask you a few more questions. I got some good ones for you. Can you hang on? I know it's late, but hang on with me. Here we go. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
Okay, we're back here on the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. If you'd like to call in, the number on the hotline, the Yellow Ball hotline, is 646-652-4856. I'll say it one more time, 646-652-4856. And if you don't call in this time, write the number down. You can call in the next show. Look for information about the show. Coach, I was just looking at the We Coach Tennis radio site. You know, we got a guy on there, John Lester. And I can't tell you how many people have written me and said, you gotta take him off of the they hate it when he goes into political stuff. He just put up one. He said he wants to know. Yeah, he poses a question to the group. Who would win a five-set match at the U.S. Open between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
You know, I go to his blog first. You know, JP, the thing is, he's so interesting. And he really is quite a clever guy. I'm looking forward to talking to him in person sometime. This guy uses so much humor in his tennis and stuff, and I think it's wonderful. And we need that freedom to do that. He never, you know, come on.
I like it. Awesome. I leave him on here because of the freedom. He's very clever in the way he says things. You know, there's some stuff on there. I think he put up a picture one time of Serena, and she was wearing tights, and it was just, you know, and he made something. And everybody just came on. There was probably 500 posts, 500 things about throwing him off, 500 things calling him a racist. He didn't do anything except put a picture of Serena in tights. That's all he did. He put a picture, and there was 500 posts about it. Throw him off. And he said at the end of it all, you know, it sort of died down, and he wrote on the post, the last post, he said, I'm sorry about all this. And I knew he wasn't sorry about it, but he enjoyed. It's funny, tennis people are just, they're some of the best people, but they're also some of the worst people in the world. Golly.
JP, can I say something though too? One of the things that we don't think about is most of the time you're always looking for people to stick up for your side of you or something like that. But most of the time, a person does not like controversy. What happens if you are in charge of something and you go a certain way? I've learned this in coaching over the years, is that, you know, because you're in charge, you might have 10 or 15 players, and people go along, and then you get 6 months into something, and you'll figure out that they had half the team not liking this policy or something. You say, well, why don't you guys say something? Well, most of the time, people just, they go along, whether it's a team or not. You really have to give people the power empower people to be the devil's advocate of the different things. That's why all good organizations fail, number one, if they only get like-minded people. You must get devil's advocate. You must get people that will tell you the truth. So, I mean, the thing is, it's really as hard as people get into a powerful position. Nobody tells them the truth. You know, it's like telling somebody they have broccoli in their teeth, and then they have to go give a speech. Well, nobody does a lot of times, you know. And it takes I was going to just tell you, it takes my wife. Today, we went to church. I come home, and she goes, she said, am I the only person that will tell you that you dress terrible? She says, and I said, I guess nobody told me at church, all those nice people, they won't tell you. So the point I'm making is most of the time people don't like, they don't, will not go past cliches and facts. They won't even go to opinions, feelings, or needs. And you have a great friend if you'll have people that will tell you the truth. You know, especially in the political organization. You got the USTA is a big brother organization. They're heavy-handed, man. They're a big, powerful organization. And we all like tennis, and we all want to be a part of it, and we'd all like to be kumbaya, you know, friends. But the point is that nobody tells those guys the truth, I don't think, in a lot of situations, you know. And a lot of times you... there is a truth, too, that number one people need to hire number one. They do hire number one people, and they try to empower people under them. But number two people will hire number three people so they don't get any resistance. And that's the absolute truth. So you better be careful who you put in charge of an organization. If you put a weak person in charge of an organization, it will crumble. You must put strength at the top, and it means strength and wisdom. It doesn't mean just power or popularity. We often confuse popularity with strength and wisdom. You know, it is not as different things. So, you know, we have a lot of number one people, or people in number one positions that aren't really number one people. There's nothing more pathetic a lot of times than small people in big positions, but it happens all the time.
Let me ask, you know, Coach, I was out, I think I told you I was out deer hunting earlier, and I was sitting in the stand, and I was sitting there thinking about tennis and thinking about coaching and stuff, and I'm thinking about playing. Yeah, I miss playing. Right now I've hurt my knee, and I don't play as much anymore. I kind of like the fact that Dennis Vandermeer told me one time, he said, you know, that he lived on Hilton Head, and no matter what, he got into the profession because he liked playing tennis. So every day he would go out on the beach, even if he had to, and he would mark out a court, and then he would, you know, play shadow points. Coach, I sat sitting in the deer stand today, and I can honestly say, and you mentioned my enthusiasm, I had a lot of friends who would coach and play. I remember back when people were playing, and I would have people that would be teammates on my college teams, where I would have people that were in tournaments and stuff. And I would hear them say, I hate this game, or I'm so tired of this game, I'm so tired of practice. I never, ever have ever said that. I don't think I've ever said that. I've never tired of the game of tennis. I'm wondering, have you ever tired of tennis? Do you ever gotten tired of it?
Yeah, I get tired of tennis. I've never gotten tired of coaching and teaching. You know, I think that, you know, the...
Why have you gotten
the
tired
tennis,
of tennis?
The peripheral things of tennis really wear you down. The politics of tennis are just awful. The game of tennis is beautiful. And I don't get tired of the game of tennis.
Doesn't it come down to people, the politics? Isn't it in every endeavor you go into? I mean, I'm sure that if you go into Little League Baseball, at some point you'll run into the politics there too, won't you?
Of course, you know, big time. And the point being is that, yes, I think your point is very well taken, that you've got to keep the politics separate from the sport itself. The sport itself is so beautiful, and it's captivated my interest for over 50 years, and yours as well, and so many people out there. And I love the game. Go ahead.
I didn't have much time the other day. I didn't have much time the other day. I remember back when I was coaching at Notre Dame, there were a few times that I got to hit with this gentleman, Tut Bartson. And Tut and I would hit, and Tut still hit the same way that I sort of like to hit. He hit the ball to me, and I hit the ball to him up the middle of the court, and nobody tried to hit a winner. And we could probably keep one ball going forever. Do you know that feeling? Remember that feeling you could have of hitting the ball through the middle of the court, and you could hit it with one, you know, you were grooving your strokes maybe or something. And Tut, you know, his beautiful strokes, I think he was 70 or something.
He was
the best. I felt that too with Alan Fox. I got to hit. I would go to every big tournament that was out there for college tennis, and I would meet up with Alan Fox, and he and I would play. Now, Alan's, you know, 20 years older than me, so it's no big deal that I was playing with Alan Fox, but the fact was that we would play, but that we would always warm up down the middle. Yesterday, before my son left and went with my wife to see her mother in South Carolina. I got my son out there, and for the first time, James rallied with me down the middle of the court, and it wasn't about hitting winners. Most kids today, when you get out and hit with them, they're going to hit a winner on the second or third ball. But we were rallying, and I told James how much I appreciated it. I love that part of tennis still. I hope to one day be and see myself. I would like to be able to think that I could at least be able to hit a ball down the middle of the court and keep it going. You know, I looked
have
at the Harry Hopman.
And you ever noticed when you watch the way great players, they caress the ball and almost honor it? Yeah, they hit it hard, but it's almost like when Federer gives a ball to a ball boy, he'll slice it over and feel the ball to them. You know, it's like they honor the sport, they caress the ball. They don't just murder their ball. They're always shaping the ball. They honor the sport. It's like an art form. I've often said that I played tennis for the three drugs that I got as a child, dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins.
I think we got addicted to the game, the dopamine rush. I'm addicted to that hitting. The hitting that I'm telling you about with the hitting that I got. I would hit with Ruditi. Remember Chris Munnerlin that played for you? I had the best time. Chris and I could hit the ball through the middle of the court after he left Clemson. I was working with him a little bit. We would hit the ball through, and I loved doing that. Now, you know, at some point you had to step up. I later would hit with these new juniors, these juniors now. They don't do that anymore. That's not enough. They're going to slap
slam the ball. And they. Here's one thing I've
is
been
that
preaching
good or bad
a lot.
Or
and this is, well, let me make, this is a big point. Recently, in my coaching, I've been trying to tell youngsters to try to play the game and practice the game for mastering the game, mastery over the skills, not for success. I tell them, do not play for success. Play for the mastery of the game. It's the most beautiful game in the world, but the mastery of the spins and the strokes and the movement and the camaraderie and the all of the things that are in the game, you play for the mastery. And if you that this is how you honor the game, and if you honor the game honors you. So when you describe the juniors that just slam the ball around, they're trying to get a ranking, trying to get a scholarship, trying to get this out of it, trying to get that out of it. Let's make sure we use this system or this system. But the point is, it's you try to work for mastery over the game. And in doing so, it's just like music. Music is so hard, you know, playing a musical instrument. You're trying to master that. No one ever starts the piano or playing the guitar and saying, you know, I'm going to become famous and make money here and be ranked such and such. But most of our youngsters have been, many of them get off on the wrong start by just saying, oh, I'm going to win something here, and I'm going to be a champion, and I'm going to do that, and the sport's going to honor me. No, it's us honoring the sport. And I always have this thing, I say, when does that which we do become who we really are? In other words, you can play tennis every day of your life and never be a tennis player. You can go to school every day of your life and never be a student. You can play music every day of your life, never be a musician. When does it
do you miss? Do you miss hitting the ball? Do you miss hitting the ball?
I do very much, but I don't enjoy it nearly as much with the technology. I think the technology takes away from the dopamine rush. And I absolutely love hitting the ball with a wood racket. I absolutely get a buzz and goosebumps to be able to hit slice.
I bought about $1,000 worth of wood rackets. I'll send you one of the things when you come up here next time. I bought $1,000
this past
week.
I've got about four or five myself. Why don't you start a new wood racket circuit? I think people would start playing for the love of the game again.
Some of them they're pretty cheap. I'm chopping them up and I'm doing a little bit of art with them. Some of them I'm keeping. There was a Kramer. I'm chopping them up. I'm actually doing this little bit of art with them. I'm trying to put something together. I saw something that I like, so I'm putting together, you know, a thing. But I've got loads and loads of them. I probably got in the garage floor where I park normally. I can't bring my truck in there anymore. I can't park. But I've probably got 200 rackets on the floor in various states.
Well,
but there's a few rackets you know, the Jack Kramer, I can't bring myself to cut the Jack Kramer up. I can't bring myself to cut up a few of these rags. There's a Tad Davis. This week I had him out, and James is looking at him. And all the kids at the park, I've got so many wood rackets now. All the kids, we had a practice the other night, the whole practice, and I got this young coach, Andrew Weiser, that's working with me. He's grabbing one. All the kids there. We did the whole practice
the
with the
wooden.
All the
kids will grab them. All you have to do is bring three or four wood rackets out to the court. Every kid wants to hit with them, and they find out how hard it is, and it teases them into wanting to do it again and again and again and again. See, we've made something easier, and it doesn't make it better. You know, the technology, the sport is still very, very difficult in controlling the ball, but the technology has really overloaded the thing to where we've gotten away from the real skill sets of what addicted us to the sport to start with. You know, it's really tragic. Young, but again, the manufacturers, you talk about the manufacturers, they control the growth of the sport in that way. You know, and we should not have let them.
I was coaching at Arizona. I was coaching the girls team at Arizona. And I go out there working. Do you remember the Somervilles? Remember the whole family?
Yeah,
the father, the mother,
yes,
then the sons played.
Hawaii,
the sons played from Hawaii. They had a daughter, Betsy Somerville.
Yeah,
she played on the team.
Yeah.
Betsy Somerville and I would go to the Tucson Racquet Club. I mean, you talk about something that, you know, for somebody like me, a tennis junkie, the Tucson Racquet Club was open 24 hours, Coach. 24 hours a day. They had about 35 courts. On Sundays, I would go, Betsy and I go out there. We'd go to one of the back courts, and we would hit, and nice girl, and you know, we would work on, so she was a lefty, and I had a good slice backhand. I'd go into her forehand. But we would hit for hour upon hour back on the back court, and it was just hitting balls on the back court.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit gone now. I don't see – I think you're right. I think you're onto something. The kids don't do that. Let me ask you another thing, Coach. You see so much now written about, well, don't play tennis early. Don't – you know – some of the comments after the Luke Jensen show that we did, you know, the people that wrote, they said that what they got out of it was that we're playing too much tennis, we're encouraging children to play too much.
Stop, just a second. I'm sorry to interrupt. But again, are you talking about trying to be number one in the world in that pathway, this pathway? Or are you trying to talk about mastery of the sport? Listen, it's like a piano. My daughters play piano. And some nights they'll go in there and they'll play for 5 minutes. Other days they'll go in there and they'll play for 2 hours at a time. And I just think that with matters of the heart, there should not be a clock ever given, you know, to that. I don't think there should be an age. You know, we had Gene Mayer was on my show about a month ago or so. His dad started him when he was 2 or 3 years old. The Bryans said that, you know, Mr. Bryan said that his boys were hitting balloons around the house when they were kids and, you know, all this. And I just don't think that there is a cookie cutter to that. Stan Smith started when he was 15, didn't he? He became a Wimbledon champion. He's a great basketball player. So the point is there is no cookie cutter there. Everybody has their theories, and there's a lot of interest in finding out what happened to make this person great. But again, that is the freedom. In a free enterprise country, people do it a lot of different ways to get excellence. And I think that the minute we start thinking that we can excellence and this is the recipe, the one and only recipe, I think that, you know, in the end, I think that the shortest way for excellence is to try to be for mastery over the sport. Mastery in the sport, not over the, you don't ever own the sport. It's too big. Mastery in of the sport and in the sport. And, you know, that's
how do you
the
know,
way it should be.
How do you know, how do I know I'm doing the right thing with the kids I'm training nowadays? All this information that's out there, you know, you got the new stuff, you got the new game, you got the modern games.
No. It's
the
beautiful part about it.
How do you
is
know?
That, listen, I had three kids tonight,
And each one of them were different and unique. I told one, I said, meet me in the morning because we've got to work on you really hitting it through the ball a little bit better, and I've got to get that serve worked out, and we're going to try something. I try all these different experiments trying to get, you know, different methods of getting the serve, you know, better. I remember the old thing, sitting in a chair or semi-open stance from the service line. I'm going to have her, you know, doing that, and then you just try this. And then the other youngster, I've got to get him hitting more. He's got to have a little bit more action and a little bit more racket speed on his backhand, so you're trying things like balls out of the air and things like that. Look, there's no cookie cutter. You know, it's like going to a fine doctor. A doctor will diagnose something, and he might say, okay, go home and drink a ginger ale to get rid of the gas. You know, it's like Doc Hollywood. Do you remember that movie where Michael J. Fox came in there and he was about ready? You know, he had this diagnosis, and the old country doctor came in, and he said, okay, you young whippersnapper, and he gave the kid a Coca-Cola. That's all the kid needed. You know, he said, you almost cut the guy open for nothing. You know, and the point is, it's not textbook. And I just believe that you have to love the sport enough to have an inquisitive mind and to find out answers and work with kids in different ways. And you know what? It's not rocket science, but at the same time, it's your own rocket science. And it's you really, really need to love the sport enough to find unique ways of doing it. Hey, it's like cooking a great stew. You would never ask your grandmother who had the best stew in the world, did she get the recipe out of a cookbook? Maybe she did, but most of the time she had her own special recipe. And, you know, and the point is that's what made it beautiful. That's what made the best recipes. And if you go to every of these restaurants now, if you go to these chain restaurants, every recipe is identical. And you go, oh, my God, it's the same old thing. Well, that's what the USDA said. Same old thing. You know, so, oh, boy.
Well, Coach, we're about out of time here. I was going to talk real quick about, we've got the Laurel Park Tennis Center High School Coaches Conference. We've got Jeff Salzenstein's Total Tennis Training. No, I'm just joking there. Dude. Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training certification, January 15th, 16th, and 17th. You're going to be with us on Saturday.
Well, I already ordered the books, so we've got the books coming from the company. You know,
Go ahead, finish.
I was scared to death that it was going out of print. It's been in print since 1997, and I hadn't ordered. I had a bunch, you know, my supply was really down, and I called the other day, and folks, Coaching Tennis is still in print, so get your copy, and I'm very, very proud of it. I hand wrote that first copy. Those first ones, I've got my.
I've got your notes. I've got notes. I kept notes from your first.
You did. I've got about 2 foot back of my notes, and I think you swiped and copied a bunch of them. You know, and I hand wrote the whole thing. That was a long, long endeavor, about 10 years of work.
At the time, you would pass it by us, and you'd have us look at it and give you our feedback on it and nature.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're coming in. We've got Luke Jensen coming in.
Wow, that's great.
We've got Luke. We got you. We got Jerry Baskin's going to speak. I'd like to get another speaker or two. I'm trying. I don't know, and you know, it might be very difficult. I'm trying as hard as I can to pull him out of retirement. I'm trying to get Paul Scarpa to come. So, who knows?
Maybe well, he should ride up with me. He's.
Well, Sandy might not let him ride.
I keep telling him, and I guess I'll say this on the air. I said, Scarpa, you better not die before you put everything you know in a book, by golly. I said, we all need to benefit from that.
We do. It'd be great if he was able to get his thoughts organized, put into the. Now you're actually playing with another book, though. You're considering another book, right?
I am. I've got the outline going for another book. I don't have much more. The point is, I can't just put a book out. People have been asking me to put out these 50 or 60 page short read, and I can't do that. I've got to put on paper things that come from my heart, and it's much more than just tennis. I think tennis affects a lot of things, but it will be a general book about youngsters and how to help a youngster go through all of the trials and all of the work you have to do to pursue excellence. And in the pursuit of excellence is what it's going to be out. And the motivation is the hardest thing with our kids now, because the beautiful thing, I went to the Citadel game and watched them win football game with South Carolina. It was so beautiful because the belief system was so, so deep for them to score that big, big upset. Most of the time, kids do only what they believe they can do. And I saw a group of young men come together and believe in the deepest, deepest realm. And only in sports do things happen many, many times out of the ordinary. But unless you have dreams, and unless you believe, you cannot achieve. And we have lost our dreams with so much reality of computers and systems and formulas and regulations. And all of these things keep you from losing your dreams. We need people to be free to think, to create. And God bless you for what you are doing with your program and everything you do out of the box. Because, JP, people need that forum of the We Coach Tennis. We need the John Lester's. And we need the Dr. Dr. Ray Brown's, and we need
Dr. Brown.
We need these people to be able to speak up and to say those things that are on their hearts and in their minds, because this is what stimulates us to want to do something of passion, of something that is so deep. This is not a trivial. Someone came up to me one time and said, come on, why are you so serious about it? It's just a game. I said, No, it's not. It's so much more. You learn everything from this game.
That's where the disconnect is. I think that's where the political, the will to, talk about things, the will to look at things, the will to see things that are coming up in terms of squelching our freedoms as a coach.
You've got to be able to see below the surface. There is a word called discernment, D-I-S, discernment, D-I-S-C-E-R-N-M-E-N-T, discernment. And it's the ability to see below the surface and see what the real truth is. And there is a truth, and there are things that are non-truths. And the point is that we are supposed to find the truth in the search for the truth. And, everybody's not right, everybody's not wrong, but the point is that we must have the freedom to pursue this game in our way. We must have the freedom to pursue what is in our hearts, to take that away makes us nothing more than robots or nothing more than, just cogs and machinery, and who the heck is going to be excited about doing that? So, thanks for speaking up about that. And yeah, we need to continue to challenge, whether it's ITA, the USTA, these organizations. It's not that the people get sort of bogged down when they have to get in these organizations. They get dumbed down a lot of times, but it doesn't make anybody bad. It's just the fact that the freedom is the most important thing that we have. And freedom is not the rules. It's really things of our heart that have to come forward. Thanks a lot, man.
thank you for coming on. I enjoyed this show. It was a very good show. I appreciate you coming on. And I'm gonna let you go and close it tonight. And we'll get them again next week.
Thanks, man. Thanks, God bless you. Take care. Bye bye.
You too.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.
No!